me just point out, thank you to Yaakov Perel for sponsoring this morning, the Lui Nishmat, his father, Moshe Ben Yaakov, Zichrono Levracha, who was his fifth yard site last week. Yaakov, just, I have to share this because of the just 90 seconds of biography that Yaakov just told me about his parents. Yaakov's father is from Poland, and he was in the camps during the war, and he and Yaakov's mother got married in Buchenwald. They were an arranged marriage because they were trying to make Aliyah, and the British were only going to let you into the what was then the mandatory Palestine. They were only going to let you in if you had marriage papers. So they met and married. Apparently somebody set them up in Buchenwald, which is, you can imagine the scenario. And then Yaakov, if I get any of this wrong, you'll correct me. And then they got on a ship with Aliyah Bet, with the illegal immigration during the post-war, between the 3 years between the end of the war, really longer than that, but the period before Hakamat HaMedina, about 5 to 10 years, where the Yishuv was actively supporting illegal immigration, Jewish illegal immigration to what was then Eretz Yisrael, Mandatory Palestine. If anybody's ever been to the prison camp in Atlit. Atlit is it's probably about 10 miles south of Haifa. It is, I'd recommend it, the museum there is fascinating. Atlit was a place right on the coast of the Mediterranean, or I guess about 10 miles south of Haifa, and they turned it into a prison camp specifically for illegal immigrants. So they would have all of these Holocaust survivors who were spent years in camps, emaciated, and they were trying to make Aliyah, and the British would basically cuff them and throw them in this prison. You should take a look at that museum if you can. So Yaakov told me his father and mother were caught trying to illegally immigrate. This was in 1948, so we're talking about a few months before the Hakamat HaMedina. Their paper said that it was 1948. They made it in. The British caught them and they put them at another prison camp that they had situated in Cyprus. If anybody's ever read Exodus, that's you'll be familiar with that scene. So they were imprisoned in Cyprus, and because they did this so late, Yaakov's parents got out on the eve of Hakamat HaMedina. The British jailed all these people until Hakamat HaMedina, and they said, okay, go deal, Israel, now that you're Israel, go deal with them yourselves. So they got out and they made Aliyah. So they were probably, all right, I imagine, among the first few Olim, I wonder what number they were, but probably the first few Olim in what we know today as Medinat Yisrael, the State of Israel. I mean, the history that Yaakov's family has in our contemporary Jewish lives is bone chilling. I was just taken aback by the little biography that he just gave me. So I actually don't know anything else about your father other than the fact that he raised one heck of a son. But even for just that, Yaakov's parents were really just examples of Jewish history par excellence. And we owe them and everybody in that generation, of course, an unending debt of gratitude. So I just want to publicly acknowledge that and thank Yaakov again for sponsoring. And the learning that we do today, both educational and content-wise, should be Lui Nishmat Moshe Ben Yaakov, his neshama should have an aliyah.
And they say that dating today is a problem.
What's the problem?
Dating today.
Yeah. So we should, maybe we should all go to Auschwitz to arrange marriage.
A lot of couples meet.
The arranged marriage lasted 65 years.
Yeah. Could be worse, right? Okay, so I want to, I wasn't planning on that, but I really didn't want to say it. Okay, one more of just public service announcements. So I have three packets here. None of these are the traditional source sheets that we usually do in this context. The first one, this is the YIJ Seder Companion. This is the materials that we did from last year. None of these you need for today's year. I just thought somebody you might want to take a look. The YIJ Seder Companion is the shiur that we gave last year that outlined the actual text of the Haggadah, and we went through that and we were discussing the different themes in there. I sent it out last year. I thought maybe you might want to take a look, and it also has the text of the Haggadah, so if you want to refer to it at any point today, you'll be able to do that. The second thing is a very scaled-down version of what I was promising in the emails of a binder of materials to actually prep for the Seder. This is only about 6 pages. I'm going to email out a much longer version. It's in the works. I just wasn't able to finish in time to print it. But it'll be probably 5 times longer than this. It's about 30 pages. It's going to have a lot of... We'll talk about what's going to be in here. But this, for now, is just a couple few coloring pages, you'll see. The last thing is just a printout of the slides that we're going to be looking at. If you want to just reference that to read something on paper or to take notes, you're welcome to do that as well. But again, none of these are going to be referencing the source sheets the way we usually do in this context. So everybody's welcome to look at them or not look at them and take them home, or whatever you choose. Okay, so there's a little bit of a different format. I'm doing today a PowerPoint, mostly bullets, and it's going to be a discussion. I want to encourage and really implore everybody, any thoughts, comments, I want this to be a discussion. If you have any thoughts about past experiences that you've had in your Seder, good experiences, bad experiences, ideas, suggestions based on what we're going to be talking about, please just pipe up and let me know. I really want to hear them. I'm sure everybody wants to hear them. And in addition, I want everybody to see this not as in any way an authoritative anything. Technically, I'm somewhat of an authority on education. I guess a little bit of a shout out to the doctorate. But I'm not. I have a doctorate in school psychology. For anybody who doesn't know, none of this is empirically exclusive. The only way. One of the points that we're going to be making is that there is no one way for any of this stuff. For any strategy, I'm giving you some suggestions that I have based on my experience professionally as a rabbi, as a psychologist, and probably most importantly as a parent. So my kids are 4 and 2 right now, or about to be 5. Just ask Tzvi, I'll tell you all about it. So they're 4 and 2. So that my focus is in that age range. But we'll talk about that age range. But I also want to talk about 2 other age ranges as well. The focus here, I titled it intentionally, making it relevant and engaging for all ages and stages. The idea is this is a challenge that we all have. You sit down at the Seder. And we're dealing with a wide range, not only of ages, not only of personalities and temperaments, not only of emotional makeups and psychological makeups, but very often we're dealing also with a varying level, varying degree of knowledge base, right? People, it happens all the time, people invite people from their lives, whether it's coworkers or distant relatives that are of a different level of Jewish education than them. And you want to make it as engaging and serious as possible, but at the same time, you don't want to sacrifice everyone else. So the Seder is the opportunity for some masterful education if you're able to figure out how to strike that balance. And I'm going to offer some suggestions as we go along about how, in my experience, I've done that. I've been at many great Siddurim over the years. I've been at many not slightly less great than my mother's here, so I don't want to. slightly less great Siddurim over the years. Sometimes we do it well, sometimes we do it bad. My parents are magnificent and incredible, but they're human like everybody else. And last year I made one for the first time when we were here, and I tried to take the bull by the horns. Some of the stuff that was great, some of the stuff wasn't as good. I had fewer challenges because I only had one kid. So, but that, again, these are the kinds of things that I want at the time, the other kid was sleeping. She was alive. We didn't ship her off or anything, I promise. So again, these are the types of things. This issue of balancing all of these issues, that's what I'd like to, what I'd like to have in mind. I have a few anecdotes and stories. I'll save them as we go along. Okay. So, like I said, I think that the most glaring feature of this Leil HaSeder is the fact that it is the night of education. And we need to think, I'm not technically an educator. I taught for a few years, but I ended up going elsewhere. I do some teaching in different contexts. But I think that the night of the Leil HaSeder is when we all need to be thinking of ourselves as the greatest preschool teacher in the world, the greatest middle school teacher in the world, the greatest parent in the world, the greatest college professor in the world. We need to start thinking, we need to be keeping, having the mentality that we should be not only a fountain of information for all ages and stages, but a fountain of motivation, excitement, and interest. We need to be trying to generate interest of everyone. And if you are leading a Seder, if you're one of the people that are leading a Seder, if you are an attendee at the Seder, if you are the sibling or the child or the friend of the person that's leading the Seder, this is where I think, more than anything else, our mind needs to be about education. I have a couple of, just a couple of quotes. Education is what remains after one has forgotten what one has learned in school. One of the issues that I, an Einstein quote that I particularly am fond of, one of the issues that I think that we all need to contend with, which is a good issue, is the fact that our kids learn so much in school about Pesach. And the schools go out of their way for a good reason, because of the emphasis on education, I think, of the Seder, to prepare our children for the Seder. But the problem is that if we have more than one child, or if we have different ages, we have a kid that has this type of education, this type of preparation, and nobody else knows what they're talking about, and our kids face it, no matter how old they are, it's rare that they are actually masterful educators or good presenters, so they're going to get there, and it's one of the challenges. So at the on the one hand, we're trying to balance to it, we're going to be trying to balance to the encouragement and making and being excited about our kids learning in school, but at the same time also recognizing that what they did in their class in preparation for the Seder isn't necessarily the what we should be focusing on and spending our time on. Again, that doesn't mean that we should be ignoring it. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be incorporating it. But I've been of the mind for a long time that if we are relying for the content and discussion in our Seder, if we're relying on the Seder packets that our kids do in school, I think that we're going to be shortchanging it. Again, for all of those reasons. The goal of education is not to increase... I had to put at least one psychologist quoted here. The goal of education is Jean Piaget, the famous developmental psychologist, founder, really, of developmental psychology. The goal of education is not to increase the amount of knowledge, but to create the possibilities for a child to invent and discover, to create men who are capable of doing new things. I would say today to create people who are capable of doing new things. But the point is that education is not just about filling a mind with facts, but it's about creating possibilities to invent and discover. If the Leil HaSeder is the night in which we are focused solely on education, that education shouldn't just be, let me tell you the following 20 facts about the exodus from Egypt, about Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. The Leil HaSeder needs to be a time where there is wonder, where there is curiosity, where there is interest, and where there is passion. We've all had good teachers in our lives, and we've all had bad teachers in our lives. We've all had good learning experiences in our lives. We've all had bad learning experiences in our lives. These are what we should be shooting for is a magnificent educational experience, not just filled with information, but something that's filled with interest and wonder, something that piques a person's interest and fascination, especially kids, but adults as well. Okay, so in order to do that, I have, you know, my own, and you'll forgive me, but these are kind of what I've devised as the main goals in order to try to achieve an ideal, form of an educational experience. So the first one is, I think, the most obvious one, and I apologize for, a lot of these things are just going to seem banal. Nobody needs to be told that they need to put in effort in order for things to be significant. But I put it there as number one because it is the most important thing. I think that if the Seder, the Leil HaSeder is supposed to be educational, and it's supposed to be not just educational, but the night of education, if you are spending all of your time leading up to the Seder thinking about what type of chicken am I going to eat, and what kind of soup am I going to have, and what dishes am I going to use, and what napkins am I going to use, if you're doing all of that, most of which, depending on your ages, okay, but I would say even for most adults, they'll enjoy a good bowl of chicken soup, and they'll enjoy the aesthetically pleasing look of pretty napkins and a pretty table set, and I don't think that we shouldn't ignore that. But if our efforts are being put into those types of things, then the education is going to fall by the wayside. If the first time that we're thinking about the educational value of the Seder is right before, or even that night when we sit down, then we are missing the boat drastically. I think, I would argue, and forgive me for all of the people, I'm making Pesach now also, so I understand all the effort that goes into the aesthetic parts of it and the culinary parts of it, but I would argue that if we're not putting at least the same amount of effort into the educational value, not only thinking about it, but spending time, as we'll discuss, preparatory type of things, if you're not putting at least that much of effort, then you're setting yourself up for a less successful Seder than you can. All right, I have a couple of quotes here also. First one, which is probably more important, the important verse of the Hillel. The fruits of your labor are going to be directly commensurate with the amount of effort that you put in. And again, I think that this is, right, I don't need any Michael Jordan quotes or anything like that to tell us about the importance of effort. We all understand that the more effort you put into something, the more you're going to get out. My only caveat here is that the effort needs to be put into the educational value as well. All right, one more quote. Continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking our potential. I saw this quote years ago from Winston Churchill, which is very characteristic of Churchill, how he was known. He was the British bulldog or something like that. He was a workhorse. He was really like animalistic in how hard he worked. But it turns out when I was preparing this, I finally Googled it and I discovered that this is not in any way his quote. But I still put it here and I still put Churchill's name on it because there was one famous author turned politician who wrote a book a few years back. And in that book, he actually used this quote and cited Winston Churchill. He is none other than President Trump. And this is the book, apparently, that he used this quote in. So I thought everybody would be interested in that. Okay. What did you say? It's some person. What you have to understand, authors who are trying to make sound cool, so they'll make a great quote and then they'll attribute it to somebody for whom a great quote would be fitting. It was probably some copywriter who nobody has ever heard of in an editor's office who made up this quote. Okay, doesn't matter. Point is, everybody understands effort is important. Okay, Seder challenges. Here's some of the things that I think get in the way, are barriers to a successful educational and experiential experience at Leila Seder. Okay, number one, of course, is probably the most important one. It's late. It's not only late for our kids, and it is extremely late for our kids, but it's also late for us. It's late for everybody at the table. You have to know yourself. If before you go to shul, you have to drink 10 cups of coffee in order to be wired for that night, I would recommend it. Whatever it is that one does in order to stay awake, I think that's what you got to do. If you need to take a 4-hour nap on Yontif afternoon, I think arrange your schedule, and whatever it is that you need to do. Everybody here has been up late before. Figure out whatever it is that makes you tick, and in order to allow you to stay up late and do it. I'm a night person. I could be up into the wee hours of the morning without much trouble. Dina is not in any way like that. So it's something that we try and navigate. Something we try and figure out. Again. I think that if even drinking a cup of coffee at the Seder is going to help you, I would, as long as it's after Kiddush, I'm going to defer to the rabbinic authority in the shul about that. You can ask the Shaila, but there's definitely I'm not positing here, but there's definitely an argument to make that actually would be acceptable. Think about it. Whatever it is that you think you need to do in order to stay up, that's what we got to do, and doubly so for the kids. Okay, we know. So we were trying to figure this out last year. It was the first time that we were making a Seder, and we know. But when Tzvi got to around when he hit about age 3, that was when he stopped napping during the day. Because if he napped in any way, even for like 10 minutes during the day, then it took us. Usually, we'd go to sleep at 7, and it would delay by an hour or two, even for a few minutes. So we kind of figured this out based on the way he works. That all we need to do is get him to sleep for as much as we can. We knew all the tricks about how to get him to sleep. I think last year Dina put him in the car and just drove up and down the highway, backwards and forwards, just continuously trying to get him to fall asleep. And once he fell asleep, she parked the car in the driveway and went back to the kitchen and we were getting ready for Yom-Tif. So, anything with this? It's not the fire alarm. I know that. Okay. Okay, I'm going to continue, and if Michael has some important news for us, he'll tell us. So, so whether it's your kids, or whatever their ages are, emphasize this point, all right? And we'll get into incentives for your, for the different members of the different participants of the Seder, but this can be, staying up, I think, should be a really good and important, I'm the fifth child in the family. For me, growing up, the big incentive for staying up was that my siblings would make fun of me my older siblings would make fun of me if I didn't stay up for the Seder. You couldn't stay up. So that was my incentive. As soon as I was old enough to be able to do something about it, that's when I started staying up. And I remember being very proud of myself, thinking that I was a big kid. If that's what it's going to take, if you're going to play up to your kids that staying up means that they're going to be adults, this is going to be an adult and thing that an adult does, whatever. And I don't know your kids. I don't know the people at your Seder. You do. Whatever it is that motivates them, that's what you need to be thinking about. Okay, another challenge, the cryptic text. The Haggadah, every single year, we discuss this about how if we really... The story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim is objectively a fascinating story. We would all love to be able to just sit down and read the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It's a great story. It's full of full of intrigue, full of deception, full of monarchies that are battling each other, the divine leadership, the good human story. It's great. It's really all there. The problem is when you read the text of the Haggadah, there's very little about the actual story that's there. Every single year, I ask the question: why is it that we read the Pesukim in Kitetzeh of Arami Ovidavi rather than the Pesukim of the first 20 Prakim of Sefer Shmot? It would be a much more significant telling of the story to read the first 20 parakim of Sefer Shemot rather than the 3 psukim of Arami Yovi Avi and then going through the drashot on that. But yet, that's how the Haggadah does it. The cryptic text is a challenge. But as we argued last year, not only it's a challenge, but it also is an opportunity. The fact that the Haggadah does this way, I think, not only presents us an opportunity to use it as a jumping off point because there's very little of the actual text there. I think it was intentionally, I think part of it was, there's other reasons why I think Arami Yovi Avi is the text that we use, but I think part of the idea was that it's not meant to be a telling of the story. It's meant to be a telling of the story which is meant as a jumping off point to discuss other things. I think that this is part of the DNA of Leila Seder, is that we need to be talking about other things, we need to be using the text of the Haggadah. So, But at the same time, it's a challenge. I tell the story all the time, often, that there was this one family in Roslyn when I was growing up who came to my father, who was the rabbi of the shul, came to my parents and said, you know, we really don't like the text of the Haggadah because it doesn't really seem to us as the story of the Exodus. So we wrote our own Haggadah and it tells our own story. So when I first heard that story, I thought that was kind of silly. I would have, I actually have no idea what my parents responded, but if it were me, I always only heard from the end of the person that said something. I would have said to the person, that's actually a great idea, but we should combine what you wrote and what the Haggadah says. The Haggadah is not meant to be, you know, sure, it's there, it's specifically meant to do what you did, to use it as a jumping off point. So I that's, you know, one of the things that we'll talk about in terms of a strategy, but this, of course, is a big challenge. The school curriculum, as I mentioned before, there's nothing as gratifying for me as a father as my kid coming home being excited to tell me the stuff that he's learning about the Seder and learning about the Yetziat Mitzrayim story in school. But at the same time, if you're dealing with a table with a bunch of kids, certainly with the kids with a bunch of ages, right? And this was a challenge for us when I was growing up. There were six of us, and we were at different ages, and I came home with stuff from my teachers, and my older brothers in high school came home with stuff from their teachers, or they didn't come home with the stuff from their teachers, and they wanted to get through everything and didn't want to hear anything from my teacher. So I imagine that I'm not telling an original story here, right? Everybody's been doing the Seder for a long time. So this is how to incorporate what children are learning in school and still have it be engaging and significant for everybody else is a big challenge. And again, as we've been saying, different ages and stages. The fact that we always are having a diverse group around the table is always a big challenge as well. Okay, so what do we do? So I mean, like I said, I'm going to give some suggestions that I have in terms of broad methods and where they fit in, but nobody should think for one second that this is an exclusive or authoritative idea. This is just stuff, you know, ideas that I've culled together. Again, if anybody has any ideas, anybody has any thoughts, please let me know. So most important thing is that no single method works. I can't emphasize that enough. I have ideas, my ideas, you know, the ideas that I have are trying to incorporate the idea that people are different and they need to figure things out based on who the people that are around your table are. But you know, if everything that I'm saying seems like it feels like it's not going to work for you today, then I think that you need to sit down and think, okay, well, what will work, right? And it spans the gamut. No matter who's at your seder, no matter what you need to do in order to get people interested, like we said, for the educational experience, to just not be information, but to be an experience, something that causes some drama and interest. Okay. Great. One more great quote. I don't have too many more quotes after this, but this is Caroline Tomlinson, who is a master. She's a really a living legend of educational of research and education. She's written something like 200-300 articles and a couple dozen books. Differentiation, right? And differentiation is classroom practice that looks eyeball to eyeball with the reality that kids differ, and the most effective teachers do whatever it takes to hook the whole range of kids on learning. All right, so I think this is just a good synopsis of what I've been saying. We're always looking to catch everybody, as many of the people at the table as possible. Again, not only kids, everyone around the table. And we have to figure out, we need to put in, like I said, that same amount of effort into the educational value of Lila Seder as we are with all the other aspects of Pesach. Okay. Differentiated instruction. What is differentiated instruction? So, differentiated instruction, probably our first example of it is Chanuch Lanar Pidarko. Gabi Yaz Kimla Yaz Sumrimena. That we're supposed to teach a child in the way that child ought to go. Right? Chanuch Lanar Pidarko. Whatever the derech of that child is. And that is going to create the most lasting, the most meaningful, the most impacting, and the most enduring type of educational experience. Again, I'm really being redundant here. This is the idea of differentiated instruction, is that we are trying to keep in mind, trying to think of what is each member of, or each person around the table, what is it that is going to make them tick? What is it that interests them? And again, we need to know people. We need to know people well. Whatever knowledge you have about a person, that's what you need to be able to bring to the fore in order for this to happen. Okay, so I actually wanted to tell one quick story about this issue from Rabbi Dr. David Eliyahu. Anybody here a Flatbush graduate? All right, I have at least one. Rabbi Eliyahu probably wasn't around much by the time you were there.
There was a whole wing dedicated to...
Right, okay, but he
actually... I dated his granddaughter, but...
All right. Important and relevant piece of information. Thank you, Judah. So Rabbi Eliyahu, so I'll tell one quick story. So Rabbi Eliyahu's grandson was a friend of mine in yeshiva many years ago. It was his afraf. I was at his afra for Shabbos, and Rabbi Eliyahu, who was, you know, thank God, still alive and well, actually just paid a shiva call when his wife passed away a few months back, and he was still as sharp as ever. He should live and be well. So Rabbi Eliach, we were walking home from shul, and his daughter asked me, you know, why don't you walk with Rabbi Eliach, because he was a little bit slower, and I was happy to talk to him. So we spent what should have, you know, what for me would have been a 7-minute walk home from shul, but it ended up being about a half hour walk home from shul, because Rabbi Eliach was a little bit slower. And this is my one opportunity to talk to this. I mean, this is, if you don't know, Rabbi Eliach is a legend, a living legend of education. For generations before the Jewish community got caught up with all of the various things that the outside world has to offer in terms of the science of education and the mastery of education, Rabbi Eliach was the man. He was the one that everybody turned to. His phone still rings off the hook with educators or Jewish educators around the world that want, you know, to get his opinion about things. So I asked Rabbi Eliach, you know, it was probably a little bit of a chutzpah question for a 21-year-old. A schnook like me to ask, but I said, so look, I'm thinking about a career that is in some way going to involve teaching people things. What do you think? If there's like if we have the walk home from shul, there's one principle that you think is significant, what do you think it would be? And he said to me, I'll never forget this, I might have said it at my interview for the shul. I might have told the story, so you know, I was since told, last time I saw Rabbi Eliach, I told him this story, that at my interview for my job, my rabbinic position, I told this story, and he says, okay, well, where's my commission? So he said the following. He said, I would tell you that the most important principle in education is Chanoch Hanar Al Pi Darko. I would tell you that, but it's obvious, and it's really, at this point, it's a platitude. Everybody says Chanoch Hanar Al Pi Darko. What does that mean? People think, and this is what he was telling me, people think that Chanoch Hanar Al Pi Darko means that you stand up in the classroom, you mention football, you mention the word football, and then you switch to the Gemara. And he said, you know, nothing could be less genuine. And kids know how to spot a fake, they know how to spot a fraud. The way that you are mechanech someone Al Pi Darko is to actually care about the things that they care about. Not to know of, or even to know the things that they care about, but to care about the things that they care about. Because if you care about the things that they care about, that's going to come off. And you'll never be able to transition from saying the word football and then switching to the Daf Gemara, he said. But you'll always be able to transition to learning the Daf Gemara, or you will very often be able to switch to learning the Daf Gemara if you have a genuine, real discussion about what things things to the kids. So he said, all right, so you don't just look at the score in the morning. You actually have to be Darshan Chokir. You have to read the whole sports pages. You have to read. You have to know the music that the kids are listening to. You have to know the things are reading. You have to know about it. And if you think it's all Narishkeit, you have to at least know it well enough as somebody who cared about it would, so that you can speak, discuss it intimately. I think that this is such a powerful idea, that being mechanech anybody, Al Pi Darkam, is never going to work if you treat that as a superficial thing. You need to know the people that you are trying to learn with, study with, and teach. If you are not doing that, then you are missing it. You're missing it, and it will never be as effective. So I would say that is another important point about differentiated instruction. It's not enough to just know who you're talking about, and it's not even enough to know what their favorite song is or what their favorite sports team is. You have to actually know. My mother, I don't have too many opportunities to laud my parents for their magnificent, some of their magnificent parenting the tactics over the years. But my mother always tells me this story that she never really cared much about sports until my brother, my older brother, started being obsessed with them. And that's when she actually started reading through the sports pages every single day. Because if she had nothing else, that was all my brother wanted to talk about, and she had nothing else to talk to him about. So, I mean, so long before Rabbi Eliach, I learned this from you. Okay. So, second component, all right, so after differentiation, involvement and engagement. I think that there's nothing as important in terms of the nuts and bolts of an educational experience as involving the people that you are trying to teach and learn with and engaging them. That means that, and you'll all know, right, I have somewhat of a style, people that have heard me over the years will know that I very often will stop in the middle of, it could be a drush on Yom Kippur, and I'll stop and I'll ask a question, and I'll even sit there through the awkward silence asking everyone for an answer. I did this yesterday morning in shul. I was in the middle of a drusha, and I stopped and I said, all right, everyone, what's the first thing that God tells Moshe in Parak Gimel of Sefer Shemot at the Sinai?
Listen.
What did you say?
Lasagna.
Lasagna, right, exactly. He told him lasagna. Thank you. Michael was listening. So I actually sat there. And sometimes it's awkward, and often it doesn't work, and I've actually been told I should cut it out by a few people. But at the same time, I believe in this very much, because I genuinely think that the best and most effective way of educating, of getting information across, is by engaging the people that you are trying to learn with. Reeling them in and making them a part of it. Having them have them turn into teachers as well as students. All right, discussion rather than unidirectional teaching. I can't emphasize this enough. Research proven methods of engagement. Okay, so this is there isn't too much actual published research I put in here, but I've read a couple of articles about this. Okay, choice. This is a good method of how to do this. Giving the person at the table, again, it could be a kid, it could be an adolescent, it could be anyone, giving them choice about what you want to do. Have three ideas at this point in the Haggadah of what you want to do. And then give titles, give categories. Guys, we can talk about this, we can talk about how dipping the karpas into the salt water is all about tears, and we can talk about, things that are sad and how they are compared to the sadness and the bitterness and the difficulty of the slavery in Egypt. We can talk about the meaning of what the celery is for, or that there are different customs about celery or potatoes. I can tell you a really great story about what my father used to do with me when I was growing up. Or we could do that, right? What do you guys want to hear? Right? I think that giving them choice is one of the ways, I think, to reel people at the table in, make them active participants. And then, once that choice is in, then you want to generate that as much. Okay, positive demeanor. How do I feel? Am I interested? Is this important? There is nothing as important at the Seder in terms of your attitude as there is your attitude. If you come to the Seder and you're tired and you're sluggish and you're borching about how much yantif costs, or you're borching about anything, I don't know, it comes off. Nobody will have a good time. The best teachers that any of us have ever had were excited to be in the room with us. They were excited to be. They were excited to be there. I've heard Rabbi Berman speak on several occasions, about how sitting in Rav Soloveitchik's shir was such a magnificent experience. Not because only the content was so otherworldly, but because you've never heard somebody who was as into the material that he was teaching as Rabbi Soloveitchik. He was an old and hunched over man in his 70s. And Rav Soloveitchik acknowledges himself, there's a recording of it, it's fascinating, that he would go into the room, an elderly man, hunched over, he's a widow, and he's, has so much in his life that is difficult. And then he would sit in the room, and he would come, and all of these, all of these young and energetic students would come into the room. And by the end, he was the energetic one, and his kids and his students were all, looking to get out because they couldn't take it anymore. Rabbi Soloveitchik was a master, not only because he was a brilliant man, but because he knew how to engage everybody and make everybody know that he cared about what he was talking about. Rabbi Berman, was that an accurate description? Okay. So I have among many other things. Next time Rabbi Berman is going to come, and he'll have to take the slot. Rabbi Soloveitchik, by the way, if there was a night of the year, and you correct me if I'm wrong about this one also, Rabbi Soloveitchik said that the two most sanctified nights of the year were the Kol Nidre night, which I think everybody would understand being one of the most sanctified night of the year, but also Leil HaSeder, which there are story after story that Rabbi Soloveitchik told about his childhood, about how it was the most significant night of the year. It was majestic. It was magical. And I think that among many of the things that we learned from Soloveitchik, the importance of how the Rav taught us Leil HaSeder is supposed to be important is one of them as well. Okay, so being interested, being excited, pacing, not too fast and not too slow. I think this is also so significant. Maybe the best thing that you can do, all right? I don't do this enough, but I try and do this the more I prepare for a speech, the more I prepare for a shiur, the more I do this. Have an outline of what you want to do and put minute markers. Put minute markers. You know when I do this? I do this religiously. I do it when I daven for the Yom Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Right? Everybody wants to get out. Everybody wants to get out by a certain time. You have your target time and you have like your gray area. We want to get out by 1, but we're willing to go as far as 1:15. Based on that, I write in my machzor, I need to get to this point by this time. That's called pacing. All right? You don't want to get stuck on the first two pages of this, and I imagine every single one of us has done this at least once, probably more than once. You get stuck on one section of the Seder, one page, and then you end up flying through the rest of the Haggadah because everybody needed to go through and sing Manishtana. All right, or everybody needed to say what they thought was the most important or the most important son of the Arba Banim. Because that's the Dvar Torah that everybody's teacher told them in school. And now we have so much content, which, by the way, none of that is even the central part of the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, of the story of the Exodus. And we miss all of it because we're stuck on that. Pacing yourself. And you can even say, guys, we're going to spend 3 minutes on Manishtana right now. We're going to spend 7 minutes on Manishtana right now. But after that, so let's do as much as we can, and then we got to move, because there's so much good stuff that we got to get to. Not, we want to go to sleep. There's so much good stuff. There's so much exciting things that we need to get to. That's what you need to be talking about. Okay, there's a source. Again, it's on the sheets if anybody wants to take a look. Okay, so the recap. The four components in, again, my own suggestions of things that are keys to essential keys to a successful Seder. Number one is effort. Again, self-evident but important to point that nonetheless. Number two is prep, having to prepare from early on, knowing, understanding that every aspect of the Seder needs to be prepared, not only in terms of the aesthetic beauty and the culinary aspect, but of the educational values, though. Number three, differentiation, being able to recognize that people of the Seder are different, and trying to cater to the best you can to each member, to each person of the Seder, but also to figure out, to do your best job of trying to balance them with second judo. And number four is engagement. Engaging and having interaction with everybody there. And I'll just, and of course we have Bob the Builder, who's there to tell us that we need to be working hard on all four of these things. I have no idea why I did that. I thought it was really funny at 4 o'clock in the morning when I was making the slide. Yes, Judah.
In terms of terminology, what do you think the difference in differentiation is and unique, making it unique to each, and unique and relevant to each kid?
That's what I mean by differentiation.
It's the same thing.
But I would add, it's not only making it unique and relevant to each kid, but also making the effort of unique and relevance to each kid or each member of the Seder fit for everyone. I want to be able to, ideally, and this is not easy, right? It's actually extremely hard. But ideally, what I want to be able to do is speak to my 8-year-old and also have my 16-year-old be interested in what's going on. I want to be able to talk to my 12-year-old and have my Uncle Joe, who is in Shomer Shabbos, who's sitting at my table, I want him to be able to be interested and engaged in what's going on as well. Dina, one story, I have a few, but one story. Dina's, my in-laws, we were there for the Sederim 1 year, and they had my father-in-law had his cousin, who had a daughter from Israel, who was doing Shirut Lumi in Toronto. She couldn't afford to fly back home for her yontif, so she flew down from Toronto to New York. It was a lot cheaper. And we were sitting at the Seder, and this, I don't know how, because after 8 months in Toronto, she still didn't speak a word of English. So what we were sitting there, and I was looking at her, and I felt terrible. She didn't understand a word that we were talking. And we were all pretty decent Hebrew speakers at the table. So on a dime, I piped up and asked a question in Hebrew, I responded to a question in Hebrew. And then we shifted for the rest of 3 hours. We didn't speak a word of English, and we just shifted into Hebrew. I think that was I was playing off of the skills and knowledge base of the people at the table. But that was a good illustration of how I wasn't sacrificing necessarily everything for anybody else, or at least I wasn't sacrificing too much. But I was able to reel somebody in who otherwise would have been checking in. So again, Bob the Builder tells us that we need to keep these four components. Okay, so therefore, in order to do that, in order to try and achieve that, we have do's and don'ts. Manishtana renditions. I think this is, forgive me everybody, because I know it's our kid's favorite part of the Seder. It's my kid's favorite part of the Seder. My daughter, who's two, and it couldn't be more ecstatic to be singing the Manishtana. I think that going through everybody at the table singing the Manishtana is the most colossal waste of time. I'm sorry, but there is so much educational value in the Haggadah. And I understand, by the way, this is with full acknowledgement of the fact that the Gemara actually talks about Makana ben Shoel. The point of the Seder is for kids to ask. Makana ben Shoel, Manishtana la'azoni kol alelo. The Gemara does not say Nakan haben vehabat haben vehadod vehabendod. It doesn't say that everybody should sing it. I think, right? I think that here's my idea of a strategy. Everything should be prepared in advance, so that your kids who are preparing the Anishtana in advance aren't going to be flabbergasted at the Seder because they get there and all of a sudden they're not allowed to do anything. Go through things with your kids, especially things that you think might be points of sensitivity, so that they get to the Seder and they know what's happening. I would recommend have the youngest kids sing the Manishtana, get up on the chair, and then have everybody, all the other kids, go through it once. You know, bada bing, bada boom, we get through the Manishtana in 2 minutes, and then you move on. Because, by the way, the whole point of Manishtana is Mechana ben Shoel, so that it's a window into discussing why this night is different. I mean, it's logically, it makes no sense if we spend all of our energy asking the questions, and then having to zip through the Haggadah because everybody's hungry and everybody wants to leave. Doesn't make any sense. So I think that cut down on the Manishtana additions however you can. If you have another idea of how to cut it out, do it. You're not Yotze the Sibri Yetzias Mitzrayim if not everybody at the Seders individually sings the Manishtana. Okay.
School. You lose the kids.
What? If they don't sing it? Well, that's what I'm suggesting.
I'm not talking about the teenagers.
No. You're not wrong, and that's why I say this with with the full understanding. Thank you for telling me. No, you're right. I'm trying to make this point. I understand. This is my point. The reason why we do this is because it's the most exciting part of the Seder for the little kids. But there are so many other parts. Now, I think that you need to... We're going to talk about... I have suggestions. This is a lot later than I thought it was going to be. But when we get to the suggestions...
Peace.
What?
Peace.
Yes, that's my problem. I didn't make my marks like I did in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So, also, if everybody would come on time. So, what was I saying? So, in order to... If you make your kid excited about other parts of the Seder, if you make your three-year-old excited about other parts of the Seder... And you explain to them, we have to get to those parts so everybody can't do the Manishtana. And you even, I would say, it's Erev Pesach. If I had little kids, Erev Pesach, let's all get together before we go to shul Friday night. Before everybody goes to shul, we're all going to sit around the table to prep for Pesach, and everybody's going to sing the Manishtana individually. So that when we get to the Seder, everybody's done it, and then we can sing it all together, and then you also bring in whatever other incentives you have to move on. We have an amazing game that we're going to play down the line, but we got to get to that spot. If we don't get to that spot, we're going to have time to play it. We have amazing, delicious candies that are awaiting you if we get to this point. If you don't, all right? Trust me, as excited as kids are about the Manishtana, they're probably more excited about candy, and if you make that as an incentive, they will. At least if my kids are any indication, yeah.
Is it okay to split it up? You do the first question, you do the second.
I think it's another incredible idea. Perfect. Thank you. Excellent suggestion. All right, everybody hear that? Thank you. So if splitting them up, there's four questions, have everybody do one. Perfect idea. And again, have this plan beforehand. I can't emphasize this enough. Prep. Have your Haggadah open. Take notes. All right. I have John, Bob, Sally, and Lisa, who are my four grandchildren, who are going to be at the Seder. I want to have John, Bob, Sally, and Lisa each are going to do one question. Perfect idea. I love it. Okay. Another thing. Things to avoid. Purely frontal Divrei Torah. I think that we can all tell stories, probably lots of them, of how somebody comes either from school with a list of notes of Divrei Torah that they got from their teacher, or somebody comes home from yeshiva with the brisker of Haggadah opened up in front of them and telling them a drushon or a chaim about Sibri Yetzias Mitzrayim or about mitzvah of achilas matzah, or anybody else. This is not the time for a lecture. It's not the time for a drusha. I used to do this, and I learned the hard way that this is not the time for you to be giving all of your novel ideas about what this text means or what that text means. I love doing this, by the way. You all know, those of you who have sat with me for a lot know that I could sit over a text for hours. I could do this, but not everybody else can do this. And more importantly, most people aren't interested in listening to somebody else suck air for a long time. So instead of that, it should be, as I pointed out before, discussion-based. Purely frontal Divrei Torah, I think, should be avoided at all costs. What do you do about kids who come with their book full of Divrei Torah? Sit before Yontif and read through them with them. Okay? Use the knowledge that they have gained, and we're going to come back to this if we have time, which I hope we do. Use the knowledge that they have acquired in school. Use that as a kickstart, as a vantage point, as a launching point for you to have an incorporated discussion among the people at the table. Sally, you told me about the Rashi in Parshat Bo that says da da da, right? Yeah. What does Rashi say? Okay, so, Joe, what do you think? How does that Rashi fit with such and such and such? If you sit and you think about this beforehand, that you're able to use the knowledge that they have without them sitting and reading something that nobody's listening to and everybody finds boring. So, again, whatever you need to do in order to avoid that type of learning, that type version of learning, I think should be done at all costs in this context. Okay, getting caught in one part of the Haggadah, I pointed this out already. If you're spending more than, pick the number of minutes, X number of minutes on any one page, you are missing something. If you are going to focus on anything, it should be starting with Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, all right? And not on the Manishtana, and not on the Arba Banim, and not in the Halach Ma'anya. It should be on the part that's actually the core Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. If anybody's interested, you can look at the Seder Companion that we did last year. The notes that we compiled from the Shiurim that we gave were about how those are the sections that are essential. If you're going to focus on one part, it shouldn't be the Manishtana, it should be there. And you put all of your energy and all of your efforts into those. Okay, remember the Exodus. Okay, one final caveat before we get into specific suggestions for the different ages. Remember the Exodus. I think that the most important thing at the Seder is that it be an engaging and interactive experience. Ideally, that should be an experience, and an educational experience, that is relevant and related to the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. That is the mitzvah of the night. So if you want to talk about, if you want to read a line in the Haggadah and talk about social justice, if that's your thing, I think that that's fine, but I think you need to sit there and think, try and brainstorm about not how this is just a launching point, but how do you bring it back to the Haggadah afterwards? How do you bring it back to the story of the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim? If you want to talk about income inequality, if that's what you think will get an interesting discussion generated at your table, think about how that discussion can then be brought back into the Haggadah, so that you're not just using it as a point of departure and then forgetting about it, but that you constantly are trying to bring it back. And if it's not in the text of the Haggadah, then at least some aspect of the story that you're discussing. I think that that's ideally should be a goal as well. Relatable and relevant. Anything to foster engagement and interest is a good thing, but remember, it's still Pesach. All right? Main components of the Haggadah, as we put in the notes from last year, the story itself, but most importantly, the story is a model for the historical relevance of the story, and the fact that we are interested in thanksgiving and praise. Praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all of the good in our lives. That is probably a theme the night of Pesach, unlike any other night of the year. Berman, just to follow up on our discussion, I looked in Rav Schechter's Sefer on the Nefesh HaRav. Apparently, Rav Chaim Brisker did not do Halal and Shul. Even though it was the Gro, which is very, very strange, Rav Chaim Brisker went against the Gro, and he did not have Halal. The Brisker Rav in Yerushalayim abstained from it as well. The Rav, apparently, and this is one of the rare areas where he disagreed, maybe his father disagreed with his father, maybe Rav Moshe disagreed with Rav Chaim, but the Rav disagreed at the very least with his grandfather and with his uncle, which is the rare instance that this happened, that he disagreed with him, and he was endorsed it so much, saying Halal communally. We spoke about this in Shul the other night, I apologize for the digression, so significant that he not only insisted on doing it, but he actually tried to get rabbis to finagle their congregations into getting them to do it, and changing the minhag. Which Rav Soloveitchik was a big proponent of minhag, so the fact that he was willing to do that meant that he believed in it. It's a topic for another time. The point is that this is a night of Halal v'Hodah. Alright, and I apologize if you didn't catch that. Okay, three different ages that I want to talk about very quickly. Alright, I want to wrap this up in 20 minutes. Three different ages that I want to talk about. Toddlers and children, adolescents and adults. These are, you know, broadly speaking, the three age categories. I think developmentally, they're the three age categories that we have. We have toddlers and children, which are little kids and kids. We have adolescents, which are really developing adults, you know, which is probably, you know, developmentally speaking, that's probably a better term for them. They're developing adults. They have, in some respects, the mind and the emotional state of an adult. In some ways, they have the mind and emotional state of children. They have the interests of children. They have the psychological makeup of children, but also of adults. So that middle stage, it's not for naught that most people have the toughest time raising teenagers. Right? If you get to grown-ups, when your little kids are a lot easier. This is a tough in-between era, you know, stage of life that we need to navigate. And of course, adults can be, you know, wide-ranging in terms of levels of education. For each, the same principles apply, and I'll come back to this. Effort, prep, differentiation, and engagement. I think education works. I have taught on all ages. I've taught retirees and senior citizens. I have taught adults. I have taught extremely educated people. I have taught high school kids. I have taught elementary school kids. I have taught little toddlers. I do it every single week and upstairs. I can't emphasize this enough. This is a truism of education like none I know, that differentiation and engagement and preparing those things in advance are what make things have more a higher quality of educational value. Okay, avoid the don'ts that we spoke about and try to stick with the exodus. Okay, toddlers and children, very quickly. How do we do effort with toddlers and children? Involve them. All right, these are just suggestions. All right, we're going to fly through these. These are just suggestions. They'll be on the sheets that I'm handing out. All right, involve the children with prep, not just the actual Seder. Okay, I think that if you are, let's say you are the conscientious parent who's sitting down with the Haggadah and marking off stuff. I want to speak about this. I want to get here by this point. Let's say you're doing all that, and your kid is in the other room watching TV. I think that you're missing an opportunity. If you're going to prepare, involve your kid in the preparation as much as you can. And the prep can be anything. What is the prep? Talk potwork. This probably should have been the first thing that I said. Forgive I hope everybody is will forgive me right now, but the tendency that we have to borscht about how difficult Pesach is to make, how difficult Pesach is to observe, I think that there probably is the no worse of a thing that we can do to make people feel not enjoy it once we get to Lel HaSeder is that speak to your kid for, you know, from 2 weeks before Purim until El Seder about how hard it is to make Pesach, you can guarantee that they don't think that Pesach is something that they should be excited and happy about. I'm not saying that Pesach is pleasant to me. I'm saying that we should keep our mouths shut and keep it to ourselves. At the very least, have a discussion with other adults or significant others, whoever our sounding board is, after our kids go to sleep or when they're not around. Because the negativity that we just keep onto Pesach is poisonous for the opportunity that we have for it to be an educational experience of value. Okay, discuss the details, substantive and mundane. Again, involve your kid in the preparation. How? Where should everybody sit? Talk to your kids about this. You can talk to your little kids about this. Where do you want Uncle Joe to sit? Where do you want Cousin Steve to sit? Where do you want Abba Mami to sit? Where do you and your sister want to sit? Let's talk about that. You can talk about it 3 weeks in advance. Can you imagine a toddler, a little kid, sitting there 3 weeks before the Seder, trying to, the wheels turning about what the best seating arrangement would be? But it gets them excited. It gets them to anticipate. Little things like that. All right? Where should we put the Seder plate? How do we make sure that everybody can stay awake? Talk about even real challenges that you think that the kid is going to, can discuss. I have a 4-year-old. I can ask him, what do you think we need to do in order to make you stay awake? I'm not going to take his suggestion necessarily. But the fact that I'm talking about it is, it really, I think, is the type of thing that will get him to be engaged and interested. Which Haggadah should we use? Go shopping for Haggadot. Right? They have such great Haggadah for kids. Some of them are better than others. But if you can go to the store and pick out a Haggadah, what's more exciting for a kid than having something of their own? Read through that Haggadah. Engage with them about what they're learning in school about Pesach. I think that this is really important. I come back to this all the time. What are they learning in school? How do they learn it? What parts are they learning? How does it relate to Parshiot that they know? Take the child shopping for stuff for the Seder. I think this is great. Both for props and like toy type of stuff, but also, let's hear you going to buy napkins. Take your 8-year-old kid to Amazing Savings to pick out the color napkins that you're going to have at the Seder. Make them an active participant in the preparation, and it will pay dividends because it engages them and it gets them interested. Devote a block of time consistently in the time leading up to the Seder. I would have liked to do this 3 weeks ago because, and I'm sure that we've all been devoting blocks of time as well. But if you're a parent and you have your kids at home, if it can't be nightly, it should be as often as you can, from Purim till Pesach. If you're a grandparent, make it your business to be at your children's home, your grandchildren's home, in the weeks before Pesach, 3, 4, 5 times to say, let's sit down and prepare for the Seder. Let me bring the Haggadah. Let's read these Pesukim and Shemot. Let's talk about the story. Let's pick up your grandkids and go shopping for the napkins. Whatever you're going to make it your business to have time for your kids. If it means that you need to shift your work schedule, I think that this is a really significant thing to do. Okay. Prep activities, decorations, charoset, tates, this is just some ideas that I've always had. Making decorations, this is a big thing, I'll get to it in a second. A charoset taste test is an idea that I had this year, I'm excited to do with my kids this week. We're going to, I don't really eat the charoset, it's really, halachically you're supposed to dip something in, but everybody else eats it. And it's okay, it's just, again, something to do. I can sit there with my kid, because he's able to, work a plastic knife, and he can cut up apples. Do it together, all right? Have 2 recipes of charoset and have your kid get to pick after you make the first 2, which it is. Can you imagine how exciting a little kid will be if they got to make the charoset, not only that, but got to pick which one we're having, and then they're going to run around the table and say, Uncle Joe, do you like the charoset that I made? Do you like the charoset that I made? How engaging them and involving them in preparation is such an important part. I found this Big Bird Passover book. I had never read it. It might be good, it might not be good, but your kids are Sesame Street fans. That's probably
Christmas card.
Okay. Toddlers and children. Okay, decorate. This is just some ideas that I have. Again, last year was the first year that we did this. I had this idea last year that we sit in our sukkah, and it's such an exciting thing. Ora Cantor and made the point to me this year on leading up to sukkahs. Why don't we have more mitzvos that are hands-on? We're able to actually have our little children of all ages roll our sleeves up and do something constructive and positive in order to perform the mitzvah. And I said, first of all, I couldn't agree more. Educationally, I couldn't agree more. I pointed out, maybe we can get her kids on the Erev committee and have them check in the Erev before Shabbos. My next thought was the Pesach. Why is it that we sit around, not only that we build our sukkah, but we go out of our way to decorate our sukkah? Some people take it to different degrees than others. But why can't we do the same thing for Pesach? How much content is there to be able to decorate? Why does our dining room need to look like the state dining room in the White House? Why can't it be decorated for Yom Tov? And I, so this is the idea. Dean and I spoke about it. And what I ended up doing was sitting down with my kid and coloring pictures every single day. So you'll see the only thing in this that I actually did do were some of the coloring pages that we did. So what we did was we started with the makos. For each maka, I had a coloring page. There's a few of them here. I'm going to send out the link. Everybody will be able to do them. We sat down. We had a coloring page. And then we had a label page. That's on the last piece. I labeled them, so we call it the label. Then we call it the script. And that, every time we colored it, was an opportunity to learn about another maka. All right? Matzah and Mara pictures, we're adding those this year. Pictures of Matzah and Mara, free-form pictures, but also coloring in pictures. Will be in the packet that goes out tonight as well. All right? Turn the dining room into the Yam Suf with streamers. This is an idea that we did last year. I took blue streamers and I ran them across the entire room, right below the ceiling. And it was like a Kriyat Yam Suf that was going on in the room. It looked silly. I said, Dean and I were laughing at it. Our dining room looked like a carnival for the entire Yontif. But the kids loved it. They had such a great time. And I can't think of anything that's more fitting for the Yontif. My mother's eyes are rolling because she always tells me that in her house growing up, her Seder was a majestic evening, and it was machlustig. I think we could use the term. I don't think that is a wrong way to do it, but I think that if you are the type of person for whom your kid will know that if you're dressed in a kittel and sitting on a throne and sitting at the table and doing all of these things, know your kid. If your kid is going to take that, and I think that's the more traditional route to go, and I think it makes sense. But if you think that if you come in and wear your kittel and sit on your throne, and your kid is going to roll your eyes and think that you're weird, and then think about what time it's going to, or when he's going to get his candy, and it's not going to be a good launching point for discussion, maybe you need to think of another avenue. I'm not undermining the your experience at all. So this is the challenges of having to teach in front of your mother. Yes.
Another idea. One year I bought at a fabric store. I have a long, long dining room table. I bought a piece of red fabric, and that was the table for
them.
Red Sea.
Love it. Oh, for the Red Sea. Okay. Love it. Beautiful. Great idea. Any ideas like that? Ways to decorate the room. I think it's great. I have a couple pictures. I'll show you. All right. So this year, a couple of things that we added. We wanted to make mun. Right? The pictures are ornaments, and we're hanging mun from the ceiling. That was Svi's idea. My idea was mun, and Svi's idea was to make bar. I told him this, and he came up with it. This is, he came up with the idea. He also wants to make bara hanging from the ceiling. Right, because that was the thing that was raining from the ceiling in Pesach story. So picture ornaments hanging from the ceiling. So what we actually did was, I'll show you a picture of it. I ordered from Amazon of styrofoam bowls. And after we were coloring the pictures, we're coloring the styrofoam bowls every night. He has to do one mun and one bara. And they're going to be sections of the ceiling where we're going to hang them from the ceiling. Okay. So this is maybe a little bit ambitious for the people who are a little bit, maybe neat freaks or a little bit more particular about their dining room. I know from being in several of your dining rooms, I know that might apply to some of you. But this is something that we did. We have a big window, a big mirror in our dining room. And we turned I got window paints, right, and colors. And I turned the mirror into a giant mural. And we don't really like the mirror in the room anyway. We're renting the house, so it's not ours. But this was such a great opportunity, and we did. I have a couple of pictures over here. Okay. We turned it into a Yam Suf mural. So you see, you see me in the background taking the picture. I sat on our Pesach. I stood there with Steve for an hour making this. Seeing the splitting, the clouds and everything. And then we had, you see over here, I had the streamers coming out. It was a 3D Yam Suf. I had the streamers coming out from the mural, and we did that. It looked ridiculous, all right? It looked like we had a dining room that looked like a carnival. But my son liked it. We sat down at the table, and he was so excited to tell everybody about the mural that we made. Has anybody been at my house for lunch where Steve has told you about the mural? Because he does that periodically. He looks at the mirror, and he's like, you know what we did on Pesach? It's so exciting, and if you want to think of Marishana Alala Zemikalala, taking a mirror or a window in your dining room and coloring on it, which is is that not the greatest rule breaker you've ever seen? Right? If you think that you're able to do it well, I think it's a great idea. Okay, coloring pages. This is the stuff that I had in the packets. Right? These are just different makot, colored pictures of matzah. These are the styrofoam bowls I'm talking about. I'll have a link for them in the packet that I'm giving you. So these are great 4-inch ones that come in packets for. If you express ship them, then you'll be able to do a little bit of the soup. Okay. Powers of culture, differentiation. What interests each child? Relating those things to the larger presentation. Again, I spoke about Chanoch Hanar al-Pi Darko. What interests your kid in learning, but Most kids aren't interested so much in learning, and you need to think about what interests them. If you need to bend over backwards to come out with some way that Katy Perry has something to do with the Seder, or some Katy Perry song has something to do with the Seder, if that's what your kid is into, okay? There's no other way about it. There's no two ways about it. You know what your kid is interested in. I know Michael doesn't know Katy Perry, so I apologize for sharing your neshama. I apologize. But for the people that do know who Katy Perry is, there's nothing more important. I'll say it again and again and again. Know your kid. What is your kid interested in? Make that relevant to the Seder. Bend over backwards. If anybody wants to discuss, my kid is into this, and I have no idea to make it relevant, I'd love to have that discussion. I might have an idea, I might not have an idea. We might be able to appeal to higher sources. Maybe we can put in a call to Rabbi Eliach. But two heads are better than one. Think about it. Prepare. Let's say you have one kid who loves sports. Then differentiation is important because you want to be able to manage this. Let's say you have one kid who loves sports, one kid who loves princesses, and one kid who loves Power Rangers. Okay, so Ema's been waiting to ask me this question the entire time. This is some suggestions, okay? First thing that you need to do is think about it, okay? And not throw up your arms and say, okay, I have kids with differing interests and differing ages and differing stages, so therefore my Seder is going to be a disaster. There's no way for me to do this. Think about it. Think about ways to integrate them. Make story characters interchangeable. If you're going to tell a story, place the Blue Power Ranger as Moshe Rabbeinu, all right? And if anybody was at my house on Purim, I did this with the Megillas Esther. I got different hats. And the hats, I was a different character. I wore Bar J. Strimal. I was wearing a Strimal for Mordechai. I was wearing a triangle pirate's hat for Haman. You get the idea. So if you want to do that, get a Power Ranger hat to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Get a princess dress or a tiara in order to be Bat Paro. Incorporate, tell the story in a way that incorporates these different themes. And tell everybody beforehand. This is, we're going to tell a story now. Here's where I'm going to be Bat Paro. Here's where I'm going to be, right? Wear a Princess Elsa dress. If you would think that wearing a Princess Elsa dress is going to get your kids to be interested, and you wear the Princess Elsa dress and say that I'm dressed up as Bat Paro, Queen Bat Paro, Rabbi Adler, Shlita, in Teaneck, I took this very seriously. Rabbi Adler has his grandchildren for his Seder every single year, at least the ones that are local. Rabbi Adler every single year dresses up in a ridiculous-looking Paro costume. Like a giant Egyptian-looking robe and a big funny-looking hat. You can be sure Rabbi Adler is a staunch Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik and the majestic quality of the United as well. He's also a master educator. You can be sure that if he is left to his own devices, he's not wearing a funny-looking Paro costume. But he's a master educator and he knows how to get kids interested. I think that if you're not thinking about dressing, Michael has a tutu that you could borrow if anybody needs.
It's all right? Spoken for.
Yeah. So if you think, and again, obviously everything within the bounds of appropriateness, but if you think that there's something so ridiculous that you can wear that will get your kids to be interested, do it. Do it. There's nothing that should be out of the realm of possibility to consider in terms of educational value. Okay. Use props from the things. The mask is great. The Power Rangers mask. That's what I was telling about. Daughter is a baseball bat. Promote your staff. That kind of thing. Your kids into sports. Figure out how school material in advance and figure. Oh, but put the kids with each other. Right. Give them roles. All right. You're going to be the princess. And there's a story. We have a story with a princess, a king, an evildoer. Put Datan and Aviram in the story if you want somebody to be the conniving person in the story. Figure whatever it is that you need to do in order to make it work. Okay, it's super late. I'm sorry, everyone. Okay, let me zip through this. We're not going to do everything here. I'm going to send out the PDF. It's originally supposed to be two classes. Let me just finish up toddlers and children, and then we will. And if everybody has any questions, you get in touch with me. Relate to Parsha and ask us a Parsha that you're familiar with. This is a lot of this, by the way, I think is relatable to older kids as well. So again, please talk to me if you have any suggestions or thoughts or questions. I think this is a big one. Know what Parshiot your kids are doing in school. Most of them, by a certain age, have done Parshiot and Shemot. Use that information. If you're making those blocks of time to sit with your kids, spend time before Yontif, and in the weeks before Yontif, sit down, learn those passages. If the Haggadah says this is what happens, the Parshat Bo says this is what happens, how do we, what do you think about that? It's a great opportunity to review things, right? One more thing, engagement. Again, this is the last component, engagement. Discussion, not teaching. You ask them to as many questions as you can, right? The idea in Chazal is that they're supposed to be asking those questions, which they are. Get them to ask. You ask them questions. What do you think? Open-ended questions, right? First of all, trivia. What do you know? How do you know it? Open-ended questions. What do you think about? Open-ended question. That's so interesting. Other person's theater, what do you think about? That's something that you could do with multiple ages. Open-ended. Games, trivia, I'm going to send a whole litany of trivia questions in the packet when it goes out. emphasis on parts of the story they know, use other areas of knowledge. Again, analogies and everything. I love this one, Seder headbands. If anybody is familiar with the game, Google it. It's really simple. You wear a funny-looking thing on your head. If you get to a point where this is relevant, I don't think that you should spend the whole Seder doing it. But if you get to the point where you say, okay, we're going to take a 7-minute break now for one round of headbands, let's do it. Make up teams at the Seder. One year at my parents' Seder, I made up a placard, a big oak tag, and I split everybody up into teams. I said, okay, this team is going to be doing this, this is going to do this, we're going to ask for trivia questions, the winner's going to get something. Okay, props. Props are big. You see these things that they sell these on Amazon. I'm sure you can get them in the store. The thumb puppets of the Makot. They have these masks for the Makot as well. Anything you can get your hands on. Making props is amazing. This is a Gandalf the Grey staff that I got on Amazon, which I got at the Seder, and I said it was Moshe's staff. It was Moshe's staff. Right? And I said, we said it at our Seder table, and I said, whoever's holding the staff, that's the person who's in charge of explaining what we're doing now. Something silly like that, but it was a prop, and it got. I was all in the effort of getting it. Okay, props. Jello blood trick. This is a great one. When you get to the Makot, I do this every year. I think this will be the last year that my kid falls for it. I put Jello mix in the bottom of a cup, and I say, no, I have a special pitcher of water that came from Mitzrayim. It's water that turns into blood. I put Jello mix in the bottom of the cup. I pour the water into the thing, and the water turns red. All right. So if your kid is young enough, Emma, don't tell anybody that I told you that trick, okay? If your kid is young enough, they're gonna get very excited about that. Oh my God! Okay, we really liked it last year. Okay, hang up schedule in the room with target points and rewards. I think this is a great idea also. Hang up a schedule. If you have a schedule, you want to get here ideally by this time. You want to set up your thing as a trivia game. If you get to this point and you've answered X number of questions, you get this number of points. Whatever your point system is, again, figure it out. Explain it before Yontif, but hang up a schedule and hang up, we're going to do this on this night and this on this night. If you want to schedule Divrei Torah, I think it's a great idea. Schedule discussions about a certain topic. It's a great idea. Again, preparation, preparation, preparation. Try to get kids to talk to each other using these tools. Generate conversation. If you figure out, when your kids are talking to each other, what are they talking to each other about? Get them to, you guys were having a discussion last week about such and such and such. Candy, 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 candy with kids. I'll give you, this is my last thing. This is another one of my innovations that I started a few years ago when we were actually by my parents. I went to the Scotia supermarket. I actually went with Tzvi. We bought every single candy that they had. All right, wait for a second. Don't worry about it. We're not crazy. We got one of every single candy that they had. And what we did was with my son, I prepared. We called it an afisplosion. Okay, what it was a giant pinata full of candy. We took one of each of these things. It was a big plastic bag, big Ziploc bag full of it. I put a string on the inside of the closed bag, and I hung it from the ceiling. And I told my son, if you make it until the Afikomen, you get to pull this string. Okay? You guys have ever seen Steve run around and Shul trying to collect candy. You know why this worked so well. He was staring at that thing the whole night. Abba, are we almost at the Afikomen yet? Abba, are we almost at the Afikomen yet? I said, no, not yet, but we're gonna get there soon. You're gonna have to keep going in Seder. And I had a 3-year-old last year who stayed up until midnight. And he had his explosion, but he was so tired by that point that he only took three taffies and then he went to sleep. He ate them the next day. By the next morning, I hid the rest of the thing. He asked me where it goes. I said, "Oh yeah, I know he took it," and we were all set. Okay, that was just toddlers and children. I had two more stages. Again, they'll be in the notes. They're on these handouts. I will email everything out again tonight. Everybody, thank you so much. I'm sorry this took so long, but I hope that at least we discuss. We. Food for thought about how we can make some suggestions to enhance everybody's Seder. If anybody wants to continue the discussion in any way, questions, thoughts, comments, please don't hesitate.